Welcome to iNurse Radio, brought to you by the International Nurses Association.
Hello, and welcome once again to iNurse Radio, where we feature some of the world's top experts in the field of nursing. Our goal, with the help of our guests, is to shed light on health-related topics that are important to all of us. My name is John Rivera. Thanks for making this part of your day. According to the CDC, insufficient sleep is a public health epidemic. For the average adult, the required amount of sleep is 8 hours. A recent study revealed that one-third of adults tend to sleep less than 6 hours. In 2009, nearly 17.5% of adults between the ages of 18 and 45 admitted to nodding off while driving to and from work. Research also suggests that lack of sleep can result in an overall lower quality of life. In addition, these sleep-deprived individuals tend to experience illness more frequently than people who get the required amount of sleep. They are also more likely to suffer from an inability to concentrate on daily tasks, as well as suffer from poor memory and social interactions. For a nurse, these negative side effects can be disastrous. Our topic of conversation today will be reducing nurse fatigue. And joining us will be Nurse Rosina Malaska. Nurse Malaska is an RN, MSN, and CCRN. Her credentials, along with her experience, will be greatly appreciated. Nurse Malaska, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Rosina, for listeners who are not nurses themselves, could you please describe what you believe is most common for a nurse's work schedule?
You know, most nurses work a 12-hour shift, but there are many that work 8-hour shifts and as long as 16 hours. Some work 10 hours. Of course, even though it's 8, 12, 10, 16 hours, you've got to factor in situations that occur where it's not like a 9-to-5 job. 5 o'clock rolls around and you leave. Patient situations occur and you have that handover, that nurse-to-nurse handover, that oftentimes can take from 30 minutes to 45 minutes, although our employers would like it to be under 30 minutes, depending on what your patient assignment is, okay? And I'm talking about, I'm a critical care nurse, so in the critical care area, I would have a 2-patient assignment, occasionally 3. So it really varies,
wow.
You know.
Oh, absolutely. And again, the point of reference for most is that when that alarm sounds, the end-of-day work bell, so to speak, things are just dropped and people walk out the door. But clearly that's not the case for nurses.
No, it's not. And being a nurse, I think, you know, people that are the lay people that are not aware of that just don't realize it until they are in the hospital as a patient or they become nurses or healthcare workers, you know. It's just one of those things. You don't just drop everything and leave. I can't tell you how many times my 12-hour critical care shift has turned into 14 or 15 hours because my patient became unstable, and you just cannot walk away. You have to. You've made a commitment to take care of that patient.
And thank goodness that you have. For longer shifts, how would the quote-unquote break time usually set up for nurses? Is it typical the way that it would be in a regular 9-to-5 scenario?
Oh, that's kind of funny. No. We are lucky if we get a break, and I'm speaking for 8 hours and 12 hours. You know, we don't have a typical break. We are supposed to, theoretically, there's a 30-minute period in there that's considered as lunch break, and I guess according to the guidelines, somewhere along in the United States, you are supposed to get a 15-minute coffee break plus the 30-minute lunch break in a 12-hour shift. Well, that just never happens. I mean, your break, pretty much you're lucky if you get to the bathroom once in your shift. You know, I mean, that's nursing. You know, that's just how it is. If you're hungry, you kind of run into the break room and, you know, you grab a bite or two and run back out and continue with your assignments, and then you go back in. That's pretty much a break. You know, if you're able to get a break, you really feel like you need to, probably somewhere along the line of maybe 2, 3 p.m. is when you would get maybe a 10, 15-minute break, or if you can squeeze a 30-minute in there to eat your lunch, so to speak, which is more closer to dinner time.
Sure. Well, I guess that's why they say that nursing is a calling and not a job.
Oh, it definitely is a calling for me. I've been a nurse for 30 years, and I still get that emotion, you know, that mental high when I walk into a hospital, you know, and I walk onto my shift and see my patients. It definitely is a calling.
Amazing. Being that shifts can be more hours than a typical 8-hour workday, in your experience, what do you feel the type of shift would be more negative in terms of an impact on a nurse? A busy shift where nurses perhaps don't even have the time to sit around, as you mentioned, or an occasional quiet shift where patients are not in constant need of attention, perhaps an overnight type of shift?
Well, you know, there is this myth about the night shift being quiet. I can tell you, as a nurse that has worked primarily night shifts for 20 years, that is not the case. The only thing that's different about the night shift from the day shift is you don't have all of leadership and management there. You know, that is, you know, they're all gone home.
Wow.
So basically, you know, you are still admitting patients, moving patients, you are bathing patients, you are answering call lights. Patients are sicker these days than they were many, many years ago. So, you know, the hubbub of the night shift can be even worse than the day shift, because on night shift we're expected to give them baths. You know, patients still have the same needs as they do on the day shift, and you just do what you need to do, you know. I can't tell the last time I had a quiet night shift, so to speak. That's just a myth. Let's just put it that way. So for nurses that work both shifts, I was reading some research, you know, just lately, and basically both shifts experience the same type of fatigue and tiredness. But for the night shift, it's harder, because as human beings, we are supposed to be sleeping at night. You know, we have our circadian rhythm. We are, you know, that's the way our brain works. That is what we're supposed to do. So it takes that much more effort to stay awake at night, on top of, you know, the lack of sleep and, you know, working shift work and everything else that goes on in our lives, you know. It's just a bunch of things compounding together that makes the night shift the worst of the two shifts.
Understood. And the CDC recently gave some really great suggestions for sleep habits, some of which being trying to get to sleep at the same time every night, staying away from heavy meals and caffeine before going to sleep, things such as this. Being that nurses have rotated shifts, what would you recommend for nurses that perhaps don't have any control over the schedule that they get?
Well, the thing that I, you know, every nurse is different. You know, you have to look at it from an individual perspective. We certainly cannot recommend for a single, a single nurse with no children or a family to do the same things as, you know, a mom who is running a household and has to go to work. You try to do what is best for you, what is applicable to your situation, okay? Take, for example, me. I'm a mom of three. Granted, my oldest is 24 and lives away from home, and my other two are older teens, and I have a menagerie of dogs and cats. You know, I try to grab some rest when I can, okay? You have to listen to your body. As I've gotten older, I've realized that I have to get that little bit of a nap. You know, I call it my cat nap. Even when I'm at work, if I can't get a break and I'm extremely tired, you know, I say to the charge nurse or to whoever's covering for me, hey, you know, can you look at my patients for, you know, 10, 15 minutes? I just need to go sit down quietly in a quiet corner and take a nap. And believe it or not, I have, you know, done that and felt totally refreshed coming back to work. There are many nurses that I've worked with who cannot do that. They feel worse. It's just one of those things. You've got to find what works for you, and you have to do it, you know. It's not a one-size-fit-all type of deal here, you know. It's just
sure.
Finding what works for you.
Absolutely. Trial and error.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Fantastic. In the aviation field, there are specific rules and regulations to assure that flight attendants get enough rest throughout the week. This is determined not just by the amount of hours that they work, but it doesn't allow them to go over a certain amount of hours nor work too many days within a month or in succession from one another. Are there any rules or regulations like this set up for the nurse profession?
Oh, my goodness. I wish there was. And in the ideal world, we would love to adopt, you know, that sort of ruling. I see all the studies and research papers that have been done on nursing, you know, the factors that affect fatigue, you know, that connection between nurse fatigue and quality of patient care. You know, we hear all these terminology that's being thrown around these days, you know, the value-based care, the high-quality care, you know, fatigue, what can we do? No, we don't have anything like that in nursing. If we did, then the average nurse out there is not going to be rotating from a day-to-night shift rotation within a couple of days or a couple of weeks, you know. Some are lucky in the sense that some organizations allow, if you prefer to do the night shift, basically you are the night shifter. So you kind of get on a schedule where you're only working night shifts and, you know, your days off, you try to bounce back to a day shift type of thing. Other organizations demand that the nurses rotate, you know, 2 days, two nights, or three days, one night, or whatever it is, whatever your shift work happens to be. So, no, there is no such rule. And in a perfect world, we would, but we all know we're not in a perfect world.
Unfortunately. So it's clear that you feel that there should be such restrictions or regulations in place, I should say.
I don't know. I've thought about this when I saw this question, and basically it's just the nature of nursing. I mean, what is nursing? We care for sick people, okay? So how do you as an administrator or leader in an organization, you know, honor what the CDC guidelines are or the American Nurses Association or, you know, the Institute for Medicine, you know, on patient safety and quality of care? Like, how do we put that in place? I don't know. It's just a subject that is too mammoth for me to think about. And I try not to think about it because I know there's not going to be any solutions in my lifetime, you know.
Oh, wow. That can be quite off-putting. Let me ask this, Rosina. Do you feel that patient care could be compromised when nurses are unable to get their fair amount of sleep?
Absolutely. There's been many studies done. Recently, I was reading a white paper you know, on quality of care, nurses' work schedules and fatigue, you know, how it affects it. This was, done by the, spearheaded by the Washington State Nurses Association. And there's many, many other, you know, studies done. The Institute of Medicine has, pinpointed or linked, you know, fatigue and quality of care and errors in patient care to nursing fatigue and everything else, you know. When you're tired and you're fatigued, you cannot concentrate, you know. That is when your chances for making an error is super high, right? And you think about the profession we are in, and, of course, we are all, every day I go to work, my goal is not to make an error because there is not one single nurse out there that I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, that goes to work, and on their way to work, they're like, okay, I'm going to kill a patient today, you know.
Of course.
That is certainly not our goal. When errors happen, it's usually, a system problem or a process problem or a chain of events where something is not, you know, aligned, you know. But definitely, yes, fatigue and tiredness. I can't tell you how many times I have pointed out a potential error to a physician who is on call for more than 24 hours, hey, this is not right, you know, did you not mean this, you know, when you're writing orders or putting in orders, you know. So not only are we policing ourselves and we're policing our peers, but we're policing other members in the healthcare profession, like the physicians and whoever else, are working, you know, extremely long hours to try to provide that quality of care to patients.
What a tremendous responsibility. Rita, being a nurse yourself with 30 years of experience under your belt, I imagine that you can personally relate to experience with a lack of sleep. Are there any experiences where you felt that your fatigue was potentially affecting your abilities to perform sufficiently as a nurse?
You know, I have a very high tolerance. And having been a nurse in the old days, I trained in Oxford, England, you know, over 3 decades ago or close to 3 decades ago. And you just build up this tolerance, you know, when and for myself, I know when I'm tired. If I'm going to work and I'm tired, which is most of the time, you know, you just schedule your work or you do your work in such a way that you're able to maybe sit down for 10 minutes and chart and then you kind of slow down a little bit, you know. Yes, I felt that way, but thankfully, touch wood, and I mean that in every sense of the way, I've not made an error. Have I been close to? Absolutely. I've walked into the wrong patient's room, you know. But with technology out there now, you know, you've got the computerized nursing documentation or computerized the EMR, electronic medical record, and, you know, you're scanning your patient to give medication, which is basically what the EMR is. There's all this technology out there to help make our to help us be safer caregivers, right? So, you know, when you start to do shortcuts or, you know, do as we call workarounds, that is when you're going to make a mistake. For me personally, I don't do that because I worked very, very hard for my license. And so I try to follow the policies and I try to follow the procedures and I try to follow, you know, the guidelines in providing care because those systems and technology are in place to help me provide the very best of care. I can't speak for other people, you know, it just is an individual thing. So I want to be on my A game all the time. If that means, hey, I need to go take a 10-minute break, you know, then that's what it's going to be. Does that mean that I'm going to leave my patient in jeopardy to go get that break? No, absolutely not.
Outstanding.
So you just work it in such a way that it works out, you know.
Really wonderful, wonderful. Rita, what do you think can be done to help fellow nurses then battle this fatigue, which seems inevitable? I know you had mentioned earlier that taking a little 10 or 15-minute recharge, whether you close your eyes or in some cases find a quiet spot, and it seems like fantastic advice. Is there anything other than that that you might suggest to a nurse dealing with this issue?
Well, first of all, if you're going to go in to work, you think about what you're going to be doing, you know, what your work entails. I'm a critical care nurse, so I need to be on my A game at all times. That is not to say that the med-surg or the ER nurse or the OR nurse doesn't have to be. But I know the environment I'm working in. So I try to get some sleep. I try to have a good meal. Okay, before you go in, because you know that you may or may not get a lunch break or a dinner break. I try to rest, you know, in between. I try to do things that will help me to function better at work. You know, according to, you know, the recommendations for studies done out there, we should be, you know, sleeping a little bit more. We should be on a regular schedule. We should be, you know, eating, you know, right, not dieting, you know, maybe stay away from high caffeinated drinks because that's not really good for our bodies, right? You know, they have these supercharged, you know, high caffeinated drinks out there, which I am not a fan of. The most caffeine I would have is, you know, coffee. I love coffee. It does, you know, help me, but that's about the extent of it. So it's whatever, you know, will work for you once again to make sure that you're going to be on your A game and you're not going to be putting yourself at risk for making an error. Because once we make an error and it hurts that patient, you know, it could hurt them in a way that they may never be able to get over that, you know, i.e., you know, they die or else they are maimed, you know, forever, you know. So it's whatever, you know, we think, you know, whether that means getting some sleep, you know, going to yoga, you know, indulging in a little bit of, you know, alternative therapy, whatever works for you, a little bit of meditation, you know. They say that does wonders for recharging your body. So whatever you need to do, there's lots and lots of recommendations out there.
All good advice, truly. Thank you for that. And you did, I did want to touch on as well, with the high energy drinks. Many people do swear by them by design and as advertised to help help an individual get a 4 to 6 hour period of work. Clearly, you're not a fan. How so do you think that they are harmful or just perhaps not the best alternative?
Well, you think of what that caffeine is doing to you. You know, it speeds up your heart rate. It has a direct effect on your cardiac status, okay? I know a friend of mine who was very much into these, you know, high-energy drinks. And, you know, she had some medical conditions that, you know, that basically is not conducive to taking high-energy drinks. And unfortunately, she had the side effects of that and suffered a stroke. Thankfully, thankfully it was not a major one. She was able to get some help and regain full faculties. But, you know, those are the dangers of caffeinated drinks. You see it on the news and, you know, in the media all the time, what caffeinated drinks will do for you. Not only does it affect your mental abilities, yes, you may get that high for a little bit, but look at when your body, you know, comes down from that high, what it's doing to you. You're taxing your heart. Why would you want to do that? It's affecting your kidneys. It's got to be, you know, excreted out somewhere. It's, you know, it's got to affect, you know, your liver which detoxifies, you know, many things, you know, and your kidneys and whatever else, you know. So I personally don't want to do that to my body. You know, there's too much more things that I've got to take care of to maintain my health, you know. Fatigue is very detrimental to us. As I've said, I've been in nursing over, close to 3 decades, and I do feel the effects of it. You know, you've got the chronic pain and the chronic back pain, and you can't, you know, I cannot do, you know, several night shifts in a row, come home and stay awake to swing myself back around to being on the day schedule. Those things are really hard for us that have been in nursing that long. The other day I heard a few colleagues, you know, around about my age talking about the same thing. We can't do the same thing like we used to. You know, we have an aging nurse workforce, and unfortunately I happen to be one of those, you know. So we have to do what is necessary so that we're in optimum health, you know, even though we really aren't, if you know what I mean.
No, I totally do. And clearly with as many people that count on you, it's not just about the individual. Let me ask this, if I may. Besides fatigue, were there any other conditions that you found could develop for nurses who are not experiencing enough rest?
Depression, you know, according to some of the studies I was reading, you know, the factors affecting sleep, you know, and the fatigue nurse, we are most at risk for depression. I don't have that, thankfully, but apparently that is one. I was mentioning that to my colleagues a couple of nights ago when I worked in the surgical ICU, and they started laughing. I said, "We're all supposed to be depressed." And we just looked at each other and laughed, but because we're not, obviously. I've heard it linked to breast cancer. I personally have not researched that, so I don't know. You know, I've heard it linked to, well, definitely reflux disease, you know, because we're working shift work, different work. We're eating poorly. We're not eating on time. you know, if you're hungry and you can't get to take a break, I've been guilty of that. You grab whatever cookie or chocolates might be at hand, you know, the patients give you a thank you and here's some chocolates, you know, and that sustains you until you can eat. I mean, those are no good. So, yeah, GERD, you know. Of course, you've got all of your bodily functions, right? Many of us will go through an eight-hour shift and forget that, uh-oh, we haven't gone to the bathroom to pee yet, you know.
Sure.
That is a common thing, and that is no good for us, right? So, yeah, you know, it's just your regular bodily functions that are affected because we're in such an unusual profession, you know, where, like I said, it's not like a 9-to-5 job. It's not like sitting at a desk where you have those luxuries. Well, for me, I call them luxuries. I apologize to any listeners who work a 9-to-5 or 8-to-4 job. But I love what I do, so I wouldn't have it any other way. You just take it for what it is and try to make the best of your situation.
Well said. Well said. Reason, a good percentage of our listeners happen to be nursing students. So for those, for that particular demographic who are probably studying around the clock, quite literally, what advice do you have for them, students who are preparing to become nurses?
Well, it's interesting that you should ask me that because I'm an adjunct professor. I teach at two different colleges right now in addition to working PRN as a trauma critical care nurse. I try to teach my students, you know, I try to encourage them to adopt good habits from now. I encourage my students when they come to clinical, if you're hungry in the morning or you're feeling tired or you feel like you need a 5 or 10 minute break, come to me and let me know. I've been encouraging them and myself going with them to have a little coffee break, you know, because as I say to them, you know, when you're hungry and you are running low on energy, you cannot concentrate. And what good is that going to do for learning? I encourage when they've had a really busy clinical day to go home and relax for 10 to 15 minutes. Oftentimes I'll hear them say, oh, yeah, right, you know, I have to go hit the books. And I'm like, well, how can you hit the books when, A, you can't concentrate? It is better for you to take a 15 to 30-minute nap, rejuvenate your brain and your body, and do 2 hours of productive studying than to go home, hit the books, and you're there for 4 or 5 hours, and you've learned nothing, you know. So I really try to promote that with them. I also encourage them to take 5 or 10 minutes, you know, from what they're doing if they're a little bit stressed and just deep breathe, you know. Of course, there's many, many studies out there that show we can control our reactions and how we're feeling by breathing, by just taking that moment to take a nice deep breath and relaxing, you know, a little bit of meditation in there. You know, go talk to a patient. Talk to a patient and, you know, change the way you're thinking right now. I always find it really, really helpful, and it helps me mentally to go sit down and talk to elderly patients, to hear their perspectives on things. You know, I learn so much from them. It, you know, when I'm doing that, I'm being authentic and being in the moment because I'm listening to them. I'm not thinking about the 50 million things I've got to do when I walk away, you know. Taking time to talk to them, taking time to talk to them also helps, you know, helps them because it shows that you're caring, you know. And then go back to doing whatever it is that you need to do. So it's just those little things, you know. So, yeah, I'm always giving my students advice. And, you know, they appreciate me because I care about them and I show that. You know, I expect the best from them. And they know that, you know, the best means me coaching, mentoring, doing whatever. And honestly, just the fact that I care about them and I treat them, you know, in that manner, I usually do get the best from them. So, you know, once again, it's just that perspective, you know, of being I want, those are the people that are going to take care of me and my family one day. So I'm trying, that's, you know, I'm trying to make sure that I coach them to be the best nurse that they need to be, you know.
Fantastic. And I'm sure that they appreciate it, as I'm sure our listeners appreciated all the good information. Riza, unfortunately, we are indeed out of time, but I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you so much for joining us today. You truly gave us a ton of fantastic information, and it was all very, very well stated. So thank you again for being with us.
You're welcome, and thank you.
A pleasure. It was absolutely ours. And thank you again to you, the listener, for joining us. So again, this is John Rivera for iNurse Radio. Hope to see you soon.